This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Lori Vallow Daybell just gave her first ever on-camera interview. And it's pretty much what you'd expect. It's exactly as bizarre as you would think it would be. She's still completely detached from reality, claiming that she'll be exonerated because Jesus showed her a vision from the future. This is a woman who believed her own children were zombies. And now, despite a guilty verdict and life sentence, she still seems convinced that she did nothing wrong. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining us, specializing in this type of behavior. What are we actually looking at here in the upcoming Dateline interview with Keith Morrison? Are these delusions of a true believer, or is Lori just really that good at being a master manipulator who just does not break character?
No, Lori is a case of a very severe classic delusional disorder, and it's a rare mental health condition, but we do see it, and it usually develops, unlike other mental health problems, it develops after age 40 and centers on specific, very fixed delusions, which are bizarre beliefs that can't in any way possibly be true, but they're unshakable. You cannot talk a person out of it. You cannot show them evidence, you know, to dispute it, that they will believe. And she is just a classic case of this. And it really is caused by a brain problem. It's a malfunctioning brain. And I think with her, it started developing around 2017 when relatives have said she was getting really weird with her religious beliefs. And when she met Chad, it was accelerated because he fed into it.
So is she, when she's telling Keith, and we're going to watch a clip here in just a second. Maybe we should watch the clip first, because I got a question specifically about her mindset in this. This is a preview of Dateline. If you're watching this after it airs, you can go probably check it out on demand on Peacock. It airs Friday the 7th on NBC. Here is that clip of Lori. Let's take a look.
Chad was convicted and he's on death row now.
I understand that, yeah.
But how,
they have some fascinating
how could you
stories.
Possibly think that Chad would be exonerated after
what
happened?
The same way I will be exonerated. We will both be exonerated in the future.
Because?
I have seen things in the future that Jesus showed me when I was in heaven.
Uh-huh.
And we were not in jail. And we were not in prison. And they were still in the future from now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just stop there with the Lori part. There's another piece to that where he talks with Colby Ryan, but Lori right there. I've seen it in the future. Me and Chad, we're not in jail. She doesn't really back it up with any sort of like legal arguments or why she's wrongfully imprisoned. Just she's seen that she's free and Jesus showed her this vision. Okay. I mean, is that all she bases this on in her mind? Is because she saw it in a vision or is she,
yeah.
Does she think
yeah.
that there's, that she's not guilty of this thing.
Yeah, she firmly believes that the version of reality, this story that her brain is telling her, that this is true. And her delusional thinking is simply unshakable. It wouldn't matter what evidence you show her. I had a client many years ago who was firmly convinced, it was a younger man, that he was reincarnated JFK. And he had all his grandiose thinking about it and how he was going to change the world. And it didn't matter how many times you showed him the footage of JFK being killed, you know, and the piece of his head flying off. It's like this guy was convinced that he was JFK and back to save the world. And these grandiose delusions about being special, that's kind of common with this disorder.
Is there any way to ever get through to someone like that? Do they ever come back out of this and see reality? Or once that switch is flipped in the brain, you know, everything's diverted this way and there's no coming back?
This is one of the most resistant to treatments mental health conditions that there is. And because they don't respond to, you know, evidence.
Mm-hmm.
They don't respond to people trying to get inside their head and help them change their way of thinking. There just isn't a lot you can do for them.
does she have these visions that she's talking about? Because she talks about it like it's very, very real. I mean, I'm not saying the visions are legitimate. But are these things firing off in her mind?
Yes.
So she thinks, yeah, I just had that. That did happen.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. The brain is misfiring. And she, when she says, I have visions of this, I see this, she does. You know, this is legit. I don't think she's trying to manipulate here. This is what her brain is showing her.
The fact that we're seeing this already, I mean, we saw a little kind of preview of it when she was in court a couple months back and acting nuts. But she's going to represent herself. This is the first thing in my mind when I saw that Keith Morrison's doing an interview with her. I was like, what kind of attorney would let that? Wait. She is her own attorney. Mm-hmm. So that's how that happened. How is this going to read to a jury? I mean, is this almost like, tell me you're insane without saying you're insane?
Yeah, it's probably the best insanity defense she could have would be acting as her own attorney, because I don't think she's going to be able to mask this very effectively. Not that she wants to mask it, you know, it's right out there. It's her story, and it's going to be interesting.
The fact that she's out there, she's smiling, she's laughing. I mean, she treats this, she doesn't seem to have a grasp on what she did or what she's involved in. Is that because she doesn't have a grasp on the events that happened, or is it because in her mind, they're all justified? It's all because, I did a big breakdown on this earlier in the week, like a four-part series of how to understand how Lori Vallow Daybell thinks. And it's an interesting ride. But once you kind of get behind it, you go, oh, well, she believes what she is doing is right, or that these decisions were correct because the kids, the exes, this is even about the kids in this case, that all of that, the exes and such, they were demons, or they were zombies, and the real them is already gone. So she was doing the right thing, and she believes that was the right thing. Is that how she's able to operate here?
Very much, very much. She has no insight that anything is wrong, and certainly no insight that anything is wrong with her. She doesn't see herself as impaired. She's got a story that is very real to her, and she's going to stick to it.
How common is this sort of thing? I mean, is this something that just naturally comes on if somebody has this? I mean, is this a disorder? Is this a disease? What is this classified as, first of all?
I think you can classify it as a disease. A disorder is more the personality characteristics, which mm-hmm. she has a lot of narcissism as well, which was pre-existing. So a disorder is something that you develop, and it develops when you're a kid, and it's just, you know, a personality disorder. Mm-hmm. A disease is something that happens to your brain. And in this case, I think it became a gradual progression, you know, during her 40s, which is kind of typical with this. And that's why it's so very hard to treat, because we don't have it really well figured out, you know, exactly how do you treat a brain like this?
Yeah.
And at this point, we don't have a treatment for it.
Like if Lori never met Chad Daybell, let's say her focus wasn't on end times, would this just be manifested in a different way for whatever her passion or interest was at an earlier time when this started to develop, when this started to go over a line? Or the fact that these beliefs were so extreme, did that trigger something that allowed this disease to take effect, to go as deep as it did? I mean, if it was something like she's really into, you know, making knitted cats to sell at flea markets. Mm-hmm. Could that have been the other direction it went in, where she's just really crazy about knitted cats and she thinks they talk to her?
Yeah. You do see people like this, although it is not common. And certainly to become violent is even less common. Fortunately, most people don't start to commit serial murder, you know, based upon these kind of delusions. But I think without Chad, it would have just taken on an increasingly religious fervor. You know, she might have gone into some missionary bent and, you know, started started doing more and more crazy delusions about Jesus appearing to her and telling her things, but essentially remained harmless to anyone other than herself. But I think Chad helped shape and mold the delusions so that it took on this increasingly deadly turn.
What about Alex Cox and his role in all of this? Number one, this is rare to have a brain that's working this way. Did all three of their brains misfire in this same sort of way? Do they all have this disease? Or are some not, you know, we're not at the level that she's at?
Right. And this is only speculation on my part, sure, not having met them. It seems like Alex Cox was very suggestible and followed along as if, one of the cult members. Was he as ill as Lori? Did not seem to be, but again, they are biologically related, so is it possible? I think it is possible that he had a similar brain in that mm-hmm. way and was prone to this. As far as Chad, you know, just my sense of watching him, he was more the personality of just wanting to be the cult leader and coming up with ways to control and manipulate people. You can look at these things on a continuum. Was he as delusional as Lori, or was he just, you know, grandiose and, you know, driven to take over? It's hard for me to tell. It certainly could be that these two pieces of chaos just found each other and then accelerated the process mutually. There's actually a term for that. It's called filet à deux. It's when two people share delusional thinking. And I don't think we know as much about his way of really processing, and you'd have to talk with him to get a better sense of that.
Like if you went into one of these end of days seminars or conferences that happened, like Chad was hawking his books at, where they met, if you were to just go through there and, like, if you could, like, nobody's leeving the room. Everyone's getting a psych eval before you're getting out of here. Yeah. Would you find a lot of this type of thinking?
Yeah, you do. I talk every now and then about my history growing up as a kid in Pentecostal churches.
Yeah.
And I can look back at that stuff now and go, that was delusional. That was nutty. That was crazy. Were all the people, you know, classically delusional? Not really, but they were followers and they were easily brainwashed. And I think when you take people out of those settings, often they return to a more normal baseline. Mm-hmm. But when they're in the group, it's that cult mentality that takes over, which is what makes a lot of religious groups pretty dangerous, I think.
Yeah, I mean, completely. And I'm not ending this interview yet, but I want to plug, you have a memoir that's coming up very soon, which I'm sure talks about those sort of experiences. You know, you can pre-order it on Amazon. What is it called again?
It is called Nightbird, and
yes,
it's available from any bookseller.
Yep.
Any bookseller can order Nightbird by Siobhan Scott, and I do talk about my religious history as a kid and how I grew out of it, along with a lot of other bizarre things.
I'm really excited to read it. I've been watching your posts about it, and I'm very interested in it. So
we'll get you one. Yeah. Now people will go, now we know why Siobhan is interested in the things she's
exactly. Yes, but just
take apart the mind.
But it's so it is so fascinating because you've gone through some of these things personally, and to have that sort of knowledge, really, you know, using it in the other direction, it helps people understand and come to realize, okay, I'm not alone in this sort of thing, and other people have experienced that sort of stuff. Anyway, back to this case and back to Chad. I mean, even though Chad here is on death row, were you at all surprised that Lori, and he threw her under the bus in his trial?
He did.
I was wondering, I'm like, how is Lori going to take this? Is this going to change her delusional beliefs about Chad? Clearly it hasn't. Are you surprised by that?
Not at all. Not at all. I think she could see Chad executed by firing squad and she would sit there and say, that didn't really happen. He's ascended to heaven and I'm going to be up there soon. And we're going to be, we're going to be really important people and having a great time. I don't think anything will shake it. You know, seeing the kids' bodies in her trial, if that didn't shake it, I don't think anything will.
It's mind-blowing. Let's watch the other part of this clip here from Dateline. It's Keith Morrison, and he's talking in this one to her son, Colby Ryan, who has his own YouTube channel, has spoken out about all of this on several different occasions. Let's take a look at that.
How did it change the way you view the world?
I guess I always was like a very positive, see the best in people kind of person. Mm-hmm. And then I watched someone that I knew my entire life, you know, do what she did, and it just changed the way I view people. The way that my sister was treated was with hate. That's not even human to do what they did to her after.
Chad was convicted, Andy.
Which is obviously very true, and he's had to come to that realization that, my God, someone I love, someone I trusted, someone who from a very early age, you know, you are instinctually, that's your person. That's the person who's caring for you. That's a hard one to wrap your mind around as you get older, that that person really did not have your best interests at heart all of those years. Or as you say, you know, maybe this, a lot of this developed more in her 40s, but was there the delusion or ill intent early on when maybe Colby was younger 20-some years ago?
Yeah, we don't have any evidence of her behaving in ways that were hurtful to the kids going way back. It does seem like that went along with her mental deterioration and this incredible shift into really being a monstrous person. I have tremendous empathy for Colby. I mean, it is just unfathomable that he has to integrate this story into the story of his life. He's an amazing person.
Yeah, considering all that he's gone through and that he's here, that's a good thing. So many people, I mean, look at Chad's kids. They've spoken out a little bit in some interviews. I don't think they've spoken out since his sentencing. But prior, I believe they did do an interview with Keith. And they were all on board. They thought, you know, Chad's framed, and at that moment in time didn't seem to get it yet. Who knows what's going to happen there, but is there a likelihood that those guys are going to wake up at some point too and go, oh, maybe Dad really is the monster that they've presented him to be?
It would bode better for their mental health in life if they get to a place where they can accept reality here? Or are they so brainwashed? Are they prone to delusional thinking that they're never going to get it? No way to tell at this point, but I sure hope for their benefit that they can start to accept reality. It would be personal growth for them.
There's a lot of people out there that have insane beliefs, that believe very grandiose ideas about themselves or the world around them or the entities around them. What is the red line here where we say this person needs some help and we got to pull them back? Because obviously you're mixing religion, you know, with then politics to a certain thing of, you know, the government stepping in and saying, you're not okay. Should there be more oversight into something like that? Or should there be more action taken into that when somebody clearly is out of their mind, when they're literally saying, you know, I am God, or I talk directly to God? And there's a lot of religious people who do say that, and they don't go out and murder people. But it is kind of a red flag if you think you're like literally having one-on-one chats. I'm not saying that people can't be spiritual or have faith or all that, but I think it does cross a line when you're literally thinking you are having a back and forth with Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. It is such a hard thing to know. Where is the line? And we seem to, as a society, set the line at when you're hurting other people or you're going to hurt yourself in some way. At that point, mental health authorities can step in and have you hospitalized and evaluated. But even then, it's rough to get to that point. And I think a lot of times kids are injured. Medications are withheld from children. Kids with diabetes are essentially murdered by their parents because they won't give them insulin because they believe in faith healing. And it's definitely a problem in a free society where people are free to believe a lot of strange things and do. I have a relative, distant relative, but she believes she's a medium and she's channeling dead people all the time and tries to make a living from it. I don't know that she's doing very well, but you know, it's like, at what point do you say, well, you're just nutty, but you're harmless, mm-hmm. or you're nutty and you're moving into dangerous territory here. It's a problem.
Because it feels like you're in the gray area when you're there. Like, mm-hmm. you're on the cusp of dangerous territory when you're in a lot of those places.
Yes.
Where those voices, those visions, whatever they think they are, they could tell you to go do something. And exactly. if you think it's God that's telling you to do something, exactly. it's not just like your neighbor, it holds a little more weight. And yeah. then that can push people over to do that. And then once they do that, is there ever a moment like for Lori looking back where maybe she did see, holy crap, my kids are dead? Do you think she ever had a moment like that? But the sheer weight of that and how that would make one feel, the guilt, the remorse, the all of that, I can't even imagine what that would feel like, that is just so strong that she just naturally then leans into the crazy thinking where it's easier to just keep going down over here? Or does that even occur to people like this? Do they ever even have that moment?
Yeah. I think for her, these delusions are so fixed, and she is, you know, on the delusional scale of 1 to 10, she's a 20. Mm-hmm. I don't think she ever goes there. I don't think she will ever acknowledge that this is a reality, that she was a part of murdering those kids. I don't think she sees it. I don't think she'll ever see it, which is just, you know, very strange, but how this sort of disorder happens.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists, all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.